Recording in progress.
Good morning, Masi. Can we start?
Good morning, sir. Yes, we can start, sir.
No, thank you very much, Masi. And good morning to the minister and the deputy minister and honorable members and all colleagues. Let me then take this opportunity to welcome everyone and declare this meeting opened. And with the agenda that has been flighted by Masi, Masi, is there apologies?
Chair, good morning to you once again, Chair, and honorable members, ministers, and colleagues. Yes, Chair, we only have one apology that we received from honorable Chebeku. Thank you so much, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Masi, with the apology of honorable Chebeku. Honorable members, today's meeting is centered around the digitalization as a strategy to improve productivity and efficiency of government services. And the digitalization of government business processes can enhance collaboration between departments and also improve services as well as maximizing paperless. At the center of digitalization is the State Information Technology Agency, which is mandated to provide information technology platforms and systems of government to flourish. And then we have today, honorable members, invited the Public Service and Administration together with the CPSI, which is the Center for Public Service Innovation, and the State Information Technology Agency, which is the CITA, to brief us on the current and the future development regarding the digitalization of government services. And with those few words, I have welcomed all of you. And obviously, the minister with us, and also the deputy minister, the DG, and all colleagues. And then, honorable members, I will allow the minister, and also, if not, the deputy minister to provide the opening remarks and allow all the presentations of today's meeting, honorable members. And I'm giving this floor to the minister, Honorable Nokpolo Kivit. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And a good morning to your good self, to the DM, Honorable Dr. Kana Pilani Machake, to the honorable members of the committee, DG and her team, as well as the acting executive director of CPSI, together with her team, the support to the committee, to everyone on the platform, let me greet one and all a good morning from the cold Cape Town. Honorable Chair, let us appreciate first the invitation by the committee so that we can share with the committee our work, what we are doing in the space of digitization and digitalization. because it is undisputed facts about and benefits about digitization and digitalization. That of ease of access to services provided, especially in the public service, the ease of doing business, the reduction of red tape, the reduction of corruption, which is anti-corruption, the ease of governance in general, management practices, and therefore solutions that are enterprise resource planning based are solutions that take these benefits to the people. And therefore, as the department and as well as the institute, the institution that is poised to manage knowledge and creativity, that is innovation and knowledge management, the CPSI, both are hard at work ensuring that we do our best to digitize and digitalize the services of government so as to ease the management thereof. But as I have the team, we have the executive, acting executive director of the CPSI, Ms. Lydia, Ms. Bugen, as well as DG Yoliswa Makasi. They are both on the platform. I will allow and give over, with your permission, of course, to them to lead the presentations without us wasting much of time, so that we spend more time in the engagements. With that, we appreciate this invitation, and I'll give a hand back to you, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and I will then hand over to the first presentation, Masi. Flight, please.
Okay, sir. Let me flight the agenda again, once again, sir. That's the agenda, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The first presentation will be then the CPSI, Center for Public Service Innovation. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Greetings to all, including the Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister and colleagues on the call. My name is Lydia Sibukie, the Acting Executive Director, as Minister has introduced me. The presentation today will be led by Mr. Piers Conrad, who is responsible for development of innovations at CPSI. But I just want to indicate that the role of the CPSI in this space would be, you know, testing, you know, acting as a sandbox where we test various solutions that are then used in the public service. But I will allow Pierre to give more details, and I'll come back with if there are any comments and questions relating to our presentation. Thank you. Over to you, Pierre. Just put on slide presentation mode.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, and members of the Portfolio Committee, as well as colleagues. DG and Acting Executive Director. Thank you for this opportunity. I just want to make sure that the presentation is in slide in presentation
yes,
mode.
It is.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. The Minister has already introduced our respective roles and responsibilities. So from our side, what we will talk about this morning is reflect on the legislative mandate, the importance of digitization, and then in terms of the request from the Portfolio Committee, what the CPSI is doing in this regard with some examples. And then we will conclude the presentation with what is needed for us to rapidly expand on our digitization efforts, what are the enabling conditions that we, from our perspective, see. I think the Portfolio Committee is very familiar with the Public Service Act and the Public Service Regulation. So this is just to emphasize, and the DPSA will, in their presentation, go into much more detail in terms of the various roles and responsibilities. But we know that the Minister is responsible for norms and standards. And the digitization environment covers actually a number of items under Section 3.1 of the Public Service Act. Importantly, also then the governance arrangements in a digitized public service, the governance arrangements may change and differ from the traditional way of doing things. Information management, electronic government, or so-called e-government, as it's more popularly known, and then the transformation, reform, and innovation. The important part of this section is that it cannot be for the sake of doing technology, for the sake of doing e-government. It is about the effectiveness and efficiency of the public service. And therefore, our measure of digital transformation is always whether that adds value to what we are doing. Public Service Regulation 93 then makes the head of the department responsible for the use of information and communication technologies. And this makes it slightly difficult because the responsibility is not with with us or with the DPSA or DCDT, and our role is therefore to facilitate and to support. But there are also various other pieces of legislation. We'll come back to this in some of the later slides, and that relates to the ECTA in terms of also how do we manage things like electronic signature and the e-government strategy that provides a roadmap for e-government implementation. And we all are aware, and CITA is in the meeting, who will talk more about their role in terms of application software development, maintenance of software and infrastructure, but very importantly and growing in importance, and it's also coming out through the DPSA framework, the manner in which we handle data and data processing. So these are some of the legislative involved, but it's very important to note that many pieces of legislation, and that's the importance of having this conversation with the Portfolio Committee as well, has embedded in them traditional ways of doing things and is not digitally enabling us to change public service. And therefore, it's very important to look at all our legislation comprehensively in terms of where there might be barriers. And we'll touch on this also a little bit later. Minister has already listed a number of benefits in terms of the efficiency and effectiveness and economy that digitization can bring in terms of internal processes, which is what we are focusing on. Beyond just greater efficiencies in general and cost and time savings in general, it also, and that's the angle that the CPSI has in terms of our mandate, digitization enable innovation. Once we have digitized, for example, hospital records, we can enable innovative new processes and procedures we can enable different ways of doing monitoring and evaluation. So it creates the opportunity for new service delivery models. At the same time, it also reduces the cost of program one, something that this portfolio committee is very clear about in terms of the burden of compliance. It can reduce the cost of M&E and auditing. In fact, it can help us do auditing in a different way, because once a fully digitized process has been audited, we don't have to then look at the detail of the outcome, because we are certain that the process ensures an auditable outcome. Very important for management as well as for Parliament is that the digitization provides us with data that can assist us with data-driven decision-making. It enables real-time or near real-time monitoring. At present, we come to the portfolio committee once a quarter and we talk to what we have done or not done. Real-time monitoring or near real-time monitoring can give us the kind of dashboard that we can monitor in real-time what's happening in the public service and then take corrective measures in near real time. Important is that although this conversation this morning is about internal digitization of services, we cannot always separate the back office and the front office. If someone applies for a permit or someone queues at Home Affairs, the efficiency of the internal system is directly impacting on citizens. We see that especially pronounced in hospitals and other service delivery points, where our internal efficiencies could be the difference between queuing for 15 minutes or half an hour or spending the whole day in a queue. The other two points that we would like to emphasize is that there's a growing number of bottom-up or so-called in-house innovations. And it's very important that we create an enabling environment. In the past, we like to have a big bang approach where an external service provider, in many cases, overpromise and underdeliver. And it's very
clear. That is Conrad.
Yeah, there's Ms. Conrad, Mr. Conrad has disappeared.
Can do is maybe if, I don't know if admin can, secretariat can remove this one so that I can project from my side. I'm not sure what's happening. Maybe he lost connectivity or something.
Masi, can you then give Ms. Lydia the share landing?
Thank you.
Apologies, Chair. I lost signal there. I'm not sure it was because of load shedding. AED, if I can just get direction of where we've stopped. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. You are in this side. I think it's slide 5.
Thank you. My sincere apologies, Chair. I'll just check the signal and make sure that we're not... I see the AED has shared. I'll ask it just to continue sharing. I think we've mentioned that we cannot separate internal and external digitization services. We have seen where the difference between half an hour or 15 minutes queuing is determined by the back office in many cases. Sometimes people spend a day in a queue instead of just the 15 or 10 minutes. What we hope to see is that many of the back office automations make sure that people don't even have to queue. Very important for us to also recognize is the growing importance of bottom-up solutions from within and from our youth digital contributors and the so-called in-house contributions, where developers within departments are creating high-quality applications or solutions that can be replicated across the public service. This, compared to a traditional way of having a so-called Big Bang approach or top-down services that are provided by external service providers, it's very important because that can lock us in into technologies or into licensing, which is not always beneficial for the public service. We are very excited about the cohort of developers that are coming through the system. So in terms of the CPSI's approach, we ensure that for us to have a strategic approach to innovation and to digitization is that we have to provide time for engagement also with other countries that are at the top of the e-government survey. South Africa is currently ranking 68th. In the world, so we can learn quite a lot from those that are at similar stages on the continent, but also those that are at the top of the public service. And in fact, that some of the proposals in this presentation, as well as in the DPSA's presentation, is coming from these engagements that we are having with others that have already solved some of their e-government challenges. The second important aspect of what we are trying to do, being a very small organization, is to create an enabling environment and a sharing of solutions. So in our Public Service Awards program, one of the categories is for internal innovation, and annually, and we've seen for this year's program, we receive at least 20 solutions that are coming from public servants across South Africa, and these we can then support for further replication. We are also, as demonstrator and as experimentational solutions, developing two new digital solutions per annum. The committee would be familiar with these, as well as the two replication projects, because these are the ones that we are reporting. And last week we spoke about the one, the Virtual Toussaint Center, that also has an internal management element to it. We, beyond the two projects, and I think that's something that we would like to emphasize, is the capacity constraints, is we currently have 15 projects in the pipeline that we cannot address at the moment because of the constraints. It's very important to say that many of these projects are projects that once they've been implemented, they can be replicated and scaled to other institutions, to other provinces, for further benefit and improved service delivery. What we also do is we have to practice what we preach. As we digitize internal systems at the CPSI, we can then share and facilitate the replication. One example is that during COVID, we had to digitize our supply chain processes very rapidly. We were able to do that without any additional cost, and then share with other departments how we went about and how we can do that in an auditable way. Lastly, the building of a community of internal systems developers. Members would hear that we keep on emphasizing this point, but these so-called trailblazers are doing amazing work and really saving government millions of rands in the solutions that they develop, because no licensing is required, just support. And what we are currently doing is entering into various MOUs so that we can share code of these applications across provinces and across government. The MOUs are simply there to ensure that we deal with intellectual property issues in a correct way and that we make sure that security and quality is maintained and that documentation is shared. So some examples, we've already briefed the portfolio committee on the development projects that we are currently busy. EMS requested us to support them to automate the planned patient transfer processes, linking in essence patients that need to go to a tertiary hospital, for example, and with a specific seat. In fact, I'm doing this presentation from the EMS offices in Midrand because we are having a status update meeting after the portfolio committee meeting. So I'm with the whole team here working on the project as we speak. Then we've presented on the digitization and virtualization of to some service centers, and there are a number of other projects that we are also working on. In terms of replication, two of the projects I just want to highlight is the digital fingerprinting that we previously reported on and e-learner and learner management systems. We are very proud of the digital fingerprinting project. This project has now been championed by the Premier of Gauteng to be rolled out to the whole of Gauteng, and the Department of Health is now also looking at the national rollout. Apart from the savings that this will bring to government, the reduction of pauper funerals, and it really brings closure to families, and there's a very strong human dignity element to this project in terms of unclaimed bodies for lying for months and even years at mortuaries, whilst this project can help identify a deceased person within minutes. When it comes to our network of developers that we are working with, we've seen so many solutions coming through, e-leave, e-recruitment, e-performance management, demand plan submissions, remote monitoring where robotics are used, or other IoTs, that's Internet of Things, where devices talk to other devices, digitization of x-rays and so forth. For example, with remote monitoring, we have seen how the Treasury in Northwest, one of the projects that we've identified through the awards program, can use drones to monitor the delivery of infrastructure projects. So that you're not dependent on an email report, but that they can actually inspect the site using drones and make sure that delivery status is what is claimed to be, and then to not pay a service provider if they have not done what they are claiming to do. Digitization of x-rays can, for example, enable a specialist to consult with someone sitting in a clinic and not having to be transferred to a tertiary institution. So we've seen that these are really saving government a lot. And then lastly, we're also trying to involve our youth digital literacy initiatives in the development of solutions for government and focus on public service, and we have seen a number of solutions coming through. Then in terms of the final slide, in terms of the $1 million question, what is needed for us to rapidly expand, and the DBSA will talk more about the strategic issues, but as the CPSI, we only have one permanent position for a developer. However, we need small agile teams with various competencies, business analysts, change management, systems developers, cybersecurity, and so on, to really provide the necessary momentum. At the moment, it's very difficult to bring a project in on time and on quality if you are working with one or two developers because of the complexities involved. This is also what we've seen that other countries have done globally in terms of really prioritizing the digitization of internal systems. So we have to rethink our HR dispensation if we are doing this transition to digital transformation. We also need a number of systems developers in departments. We've seen where these developers are active. They are saving their departments literally millions. We've seen the impact that something like this portal has had. One of our previous Innovator of the Year winners that was fully developed in-house and that is saving citizens and government a tremendous amount, as well as reducing issues of corruption, fraud and corruption. Very important from our engagements locally and internationally, the key enablers is a sovereign digital identity. We need to make sure that people can be identified in a secure manner to transact in terms of the various authorization that they have, in terms of the delegation of duties, but then also for citizens to be able to access government services. I've mentioned that legislation can be in barriers. We all know about the so-called Z forms, Z83 and so forth. If a legislation requires the attachment of a physical signature, then that is a barrier to digitization. So what many countries have done is they have started with reviews of their legislation and then all new legislation to be digital by design, something that the DPSA will touch on in terms of their framework as well. And then the way that we design and that we inclusion, trust, transparency, and related issues is extremely important. This is part of a broader policy framework as well. And then very important for us, with CETA also present in the meeting, is that we need to rethink the way that we provide broadband to service delivery sites such as police offices, clinics. In the past, we only needed a 2 megabyte line because people were just sending emails or logging on to their computers. But if we have real-time data-driven services, we need at each of these institutions high-speed broadband. SA Connect is working towards that, but we also need to reduce the cost of these broadband services because it is possible to provide broadband services at the cost of a 2 meg line of the past. Then from a systems perspective, Chair, is we do have a number of role players. And what happens if there are many role players, then issues of role clarification and overlap or things falling through the cracks become a problem. And therefore, in terms of really affecting an e-government strategy, we need to look at role clarification also in terms of which services are provided by CETA and which are provided by through internal capacity in order to reduce costs. Issues of interoperability, things like APIs, application software that connects various systems to each other so that there's interoperability. And then very important, intellectual property management for systems developed within government departments. Our national and provincial coordination for replication. We keep on procuring the same services across the public service whilst we have internally developed systems. We keep on reinventing the wheel and we are, from CPSI, we're trying to have a more coordinated approach, as I've mentioned earlier through our trailblazers, but there need to be much better national and provincial coordination of digitization efforts. And then lastly, Chair, is we've had a moratorium because of the IFMS system on the development of internal systems that relate to e-leave and to e-recruitment and so forth. I think we do have enough bottom-up solutions that comes at no cost to government, that we need to make sure that we rapidly roll these out across all provinces. And that would make a huge difference in terms of what we are doing. Chair, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. And thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Skonrad. Thank you very much for your presentation. The next presentation, honorable members, is the department. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members, as well as Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues from the various departments. Chairperson, I have a colleague by the name of Zaid, Mr. Zaid Abubakar, who is the acting DDG responsible for this portfolio, who will be leading us on the presentation today. With your permission, Chair, if I may hand over to him. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable DG.
Good morning, honourable members, honourable chair, minister, deputy minister, and colleagues. May I be allowed to share my screen and flight the presentation?
Yes, Mr. Abubakar.
Thank you, ma'am.
Minister.
I hope my screen is visible.
Hi, DG.
Yes. Yes, Chair.
Can you close your mic, please? Over to you, Mr.
It's closed, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning once again. I will be presenting a presentation on what we refer to as digitalization solution proposal that we developed for the public services business service mapping program. And I know it sounds like quite a lot, but and a mouthful, but I will endeavor to explain it and break it down through you, Chair. So we will cover the background and then go into some detail in terms of the actual project that looks at developing digitalization solution proposals. I will try in terms of the background, Chair, to cover, to just give some background on the other work that DPSA does, just to give it context. I think in terms of the medium-term strategic framework 2024, it makes provision for DPSA to lead the modernization of business processes in the public service. There is a program that's been developed out of the GSI branch that's referred to as the Business Process Modernization Program. And that program seeks to modernize the business processes that are really owned by departments themselves. Its objective is about keeping pace with new technologies, trends, and tools. And ultimately, it is closely linked to the aspirations of digital transformation. Now, just by way of background, Chair, in terms of the roles of the different role players of digitalization in the public service, we understand that the Minister for Communications and Digital Technologies, through the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, is responsible for establishing countrywide what's referred to as e-strategies, but what we understand to be digital strategies. And we will use and the term e-government, e-strategy, ICT will be used interchangeably, you will find, Chair and members, in all of the discussions around these components, not only here, but in other forums as well. We understand there to be a natural progression from ICT over the years into e-government and now into digital transformation. These concepts grow and build on each other. And so you might find that we use them interchangeably in referring to some of the previous documentation and as we move forward into the digital space. So the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies, responsible for establishing country views and country infrastructure from a digital technology perspective, as well as responsible for setting the skills requirements and the skill capabilities in the country in terms of digital skills, as well as dealing with issues of the digital economy, et cetera, et cetera. Now, as it relates to then the Minister for Public Service and Administration being responsible for the establishment of norms and standards of ICT, including digital technologies in the public service. This is how we understand that we take our guidance and we work hand in hand with the DCDT to utilize the country strategies and the country infrastructure that's available in order to digitalize the public service. And then we also talk about the state IT agency. I know they are here and they'll speak more broadly about their mandate. But as we understand it, that the state IT agency is responsible for implementing and supporting departments in the implementation of the digital technologies. So the DPSA, we set the policies, we set the norms, and we set the standards. CETA, together with departments, are then responsible for implementing these technologies in order to deliver services and in order to improve internal efficiencies. So I thought it's important to just set the context in terms of where the responsibilities lie. I've spoken as well about some key terminologies, e-government, digital government, how we understand them to be interchangeable and building on each other. And I've also explained what the business process modernization program is set to do. I think in 21-22, the BPM program was initiated, as I've indicated, through the GSI branch, to map out business processes in order to achieve improvements in access, efficiency, and quality. It was developed through a concept note, widely consulted with relevant stakeholders and partner departments. We've identified priority departments in the economic and social clusters for initial participation. However, the program is meant, and it provides a framework for how departments can then use some of these methodologies around business process modernization to, one, reflect on how they are delivering services internally, and two, reflect on how those services can be transformed. So at this point, at the point of the BPM program in terms of its initiation and how it was formed, it was looking at identifying in existing business processes and at least creating an understanding of how those business processes are delivered. Chair and members, you will recall, I think, at the time of transformation for Home Affairs, before technology came on board, before technology was starting to be used as it is now, Home Affairs were delivering the passport and the ID in a number of different ways. So delivering the same service in, I think, 10 or 15 different ways in different areas. And much of the gains that Home Affairs was able to see in relation to the improvement of its service around those particular services related to simply taking the existing manual process and optimizing it. And this is how I think best I can explain what the BPM program is meant to do. It is not necessarily about technology. It is about departments understanding their business processes and continuously improving their business processes. And of course, as we relate to modernization, in the 4IR era, then we look at how technology can be improved. So in essence, the business process modernization would have mapped and documented business processes across many departments. And the natural progression from that was to then involve the branch that's responsible for e-government and for digital government to be able to then support those departments moving forward. I think, though, I should explain as well that as part of the work of the DPSA and the leadership of the minister, we've developed since 2022 February a number of prescripts that enable digitalization of government services. These include, I can mention quite very briefly, the use of cloud technologies. So in February 2022, the minister published the determination and directive on the use of cloud technologies in the public service. And this is to provide clear guidance on the adoption and the use of cloud computing services in the public service. Now, why am I mentioning it and why is it important? Because the majority of technology providers in 2023, and in fact, going back even a few years, have started to migrate their approaches to providing services through the cloud. And so it allows us as government with an aging IT infrastructure and not necessarily being able to keep up from a fiscal perspective in terms of refreshing our technology platforms. It allows us as government and the general industry and private sector to be able to use the latest and greatest technology without having to invest in the underlying infrastructure platforms. And this is really a game changer for government. It's a game changer from the private sector. Chair and members, you would be familiar with cloud technologies like Gmail, which have been around for some time, where you simply are able to use the functionality of an entire platform behind which sit servers and sit infrastructure and sit data centers and sit networks and all of the nuts and bolts of IT. And so the determination and directive on the use of cloud is quite exciting in the public service. We have already started to see up to 61 departments that have started to use cloud technologies and starting to get the benefit of cloud. The other ones that I thought I needed to mention was around cybersecurity, an important component in the digitalization agenda. Without cybersecurity, without securing our information and our technology, we won't really have the trust of citizens and of the public in general to be able to deploy this technology that we need to deploy in order to automate and digitalize our business processes. So as in June of 2022, the Minister of Public Service published a directive on information security management in the public service. And this directive is meant to take departments from a maturity level that is really not where we want to be to a base maturity level that looks to secure both our infrastructure, IT infrastructure, as well as our internal data assets and citizen assets. Again, an important piece of enabling legislation or directive that seeks to enable digital transformation. The next two I will talk about very briefly is a directive published in December 2022 around IT service continuity. And this is about making sure that as we deploy digital infrastructure, that departments are able to ensure that we have continuity. So it is about making sure that our systems are highly available. It is also making sure that we manage risk in terms of disasters that can happen, risk in terms of issues such as load shedding, et cetera, et cetera. So the basics that need to be in place to ensure that when we present a service digitally as a government department or a collection of government departments, that we're able to make sure that those services are available through disasters, but as well through incidents that can happen in any environment. The second to last one I want to mention, just in terms of what we've been doing enabling business process automation and enabling digital transformation, is dealing with the area of digital governance. And this is a determination and directive on the corporate governance of ICT that was published by the minister on the 17th of November in 2022. And again, this is really an enabling piece of legislation that is seeking to create value from technology deployments in government. We know from AG reports, as an example, that the AG has highlighted a number of inefficiencies in the way IT projects and digital projects are being deployed and managed, and the value that departments are starting to see from these investments. And so this determination and directive is meant to bring the business closer to the technology in terms of accountability, in terms of oversight, and in terms of ensuring that we have value for money from our technology to deployment. And the last one I will mention that's coming fairly soon is a determination and directive on knowledge and data management. We all understand that data is really the oil of the digital era. And so without data, none of this digital transformation can happen. None of the 4R can happen. And so it's important that we start to create good practice in departments around owning data. But more importantly, it's important that we start to create good knowledge management practices in departments. And so that determination and directive, as I've indicated, as a background to Chair and members, there has been a lot of work that the DPSA has been doing up to now in order to create an enabling environment for digital transformation. Some of the solutions that need to come in place and will come in place in government across the environment will be enabled by some of these directives and determinations. So I think lastly, from a background perspective, before I go into the specific BBM program and the request from the committee in terms of the detail around that, is to talk about the policy framework, a draft policy framework on digitalization that the DPSA has been developing together with our partners in DCDT. And this is a framework that's been aligned to the OECD's framework on digital government, taking good practice from what other governments are doing, what the governments in Asia, what other African countries are doing around digitalization. And the framework has six pillars, but from an objective perspective, the framework is seeking to enhance citizen access. Our minister spoke about the need to create access to services using digital technologies, and the policy framework is meant to unpack that and how government will do that. It's meant to improve efficiency and effectiveness of government operations. So focusing on the internal efficiencies and how digital technologies will must enable that. It's meant to ensure that security and privacy of citizen data is maintained. So what are the policies and guidelines that are going to be required to ensure security of citizen and government data? It's meant to foster innovation and digital skills development in the public service. And lastly, but not least, of course, it's meant to enhance transparency and accountability. And we know that the issue of trusting government is an issue that we need to deal with, an issue of accountability. And really, there's an opportunity from a digital technology perspective to gain the trust of citizens using digital technologies, using data. And so the policy framework that we are busy developing with our partners, with the Digital Council, with the Council of CIOs of all departments, is meant to deal with that. So I've given a broad overview of the work that the DPSA is doing, but let me go into the specifics of the prioritized digitalization solution proposals. In the APP of 23-24, the DPSA has committed, and specifically the branch e-government services and information management, has committed to developing 4 digitalization proposals. So what are digitalization proposals? I've spoken about the BPM, the business process modernization program, and how it looked. It went into departments, into specific departments as a pilot, and assisted the departments to document their business processes. So we have manual processes that exist across government. This program went in and assisted in terms of the mapping of those business processes. And so the natural progression around looking at those manual processes is to look at how we can digitalize them. So the DPSA is working with our partners, CITA and the department, to develop technology proposals for those manual processes to assist the department in fast-tracking their digitalization efforts. Of course, the question would be, well, why 4? We have 161 departments. There are probably thousands of business processes. In the DPSA, we do not have the capacity, the capability to do all 161 departments and all of their business processes. But this initiative is really meant, as a catalytic intervention, that those departments that we are able to work with can see how the process is meant to be developed and then is able to continue. 2, we can use these examples as a case study to assist other departments in terms of their digitalization efforts. And 3, of course, it will assist us internally in terms of refining our own methods and methodologies, having now the opportunity to work hand in hand with the departments to be able to provide them with digitalization solutions for their manual processes. Of course, I've indicated in the overview that we have different role players in the digitalization agenda. Ours in the DPSA is to establish the norms and the standards and the policy for the public service and not necessarily do the implementation. But I think there are times when we do get involved with implementation around case studies and around assisting departments and, of course, assisting ourselves in terms of understanding our policy development processes and implementation a bit better. So in the first, we've agreed to do 4 digitalization proposals in this financial year. In the first quarter, we worked with an application called the Environmental Authorization Application, and we worked with the Mpumalanga Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs. And so this manual process currently, it processes an average of 140 environmental authorizations per annum. Of course, I'll speak a little bit about the process and the problems that it has and how the digitalization can improve that process. So in terms of understanding what a proposal would look like, what is this deliverable that we would produce for the department, I've given an overview of what this proposal would look like. Of course, the background, the scope of the work, the objectives, looking at the activities that need to happen within that and some of the deliverables. So this is just an overview of what the deliverable is. We'll deliver 4 of them working with different departments. From a problem statement perspective, we understood, having created a task team, worked with the department, that internal department processes are still strongly manual and paper-based, that the service delivery mode, specifically in terms of this service, is mainly face-to-face, of course, being face-to-face characterized by restrictive working hours, the need to queue, the issue of traveling time for disadvantaged communities, all problems that have been highlighted by the department in terms of existing process. There are a number of forms that need to be completed manually. The need internally in the department for users to resubmit their data, and of course, storage of those forms and the data in a range of repository, all problems that we highlight out of the existing manual process. Of course, as part of that assessment, we understand that in the province, there is weak ICT infrastructure, and so these all contribute to the problem statement. From an objective perspective, the objective has been identified up front to develop a cloud-based environmental authorization application system to be able to store and retrieve these applications and to process these applications. I think from a proposal in terms of the scope perspective, just to detail it a little bit more, we will develop a cloud-based, or the proposal at least talks about the development of a cloud-based environmental system to modernize the application submission and processing in Mpumalanga. It talks about the automation of the policy and the operational processes so that the regulatory outcomes can be achieved. It talks about looking at a multi-channel approach in terms of developing this application. So it talks about, well, when we digitize this manual process, we shouldn't necessarily only make it available on one channel, that it must, for instance, be available on a mobile platform, on a cell phone. It must also be available on a desktop. It must be available through different platforms. It must also be assist for those citizens that don't have access to these digital platforms to still be able to come in to an Mpumalanga service delivery site and be able to be assisted in terms of processing that application. It must also have an analytics component. So as these processes are being digitalized, as these applications are coming through, the department must be able to create analytics and analyze the data, analyze the trends, and be able to improve their internal processes and improve the services that they deliver. And of course, it must ensure complete and accurate information across the entire application lifecycle. Now, from a deliverable perspective, I'll really be brief around it because I think I've touched most of it. It must be cloud-based. It must have all of those technical components that a solution proposal of this nature should have, including interfaces around reporting. It must talk about user registration, et cetera, et cetera. So these are really technical details that would be that are included in the document itself. Just to give the chair and members and deputy minister an indication of typically what would be found in these proposals. To continue that, of course, the issue of notification, being able to keep citizens aware of the process of their application, of their service, and where it is in that process is an important part of building their trust with the citizen around the services that get delivered. And so both in terms of this deliverable here and in terms of our approach in the policy framework moving forward, we are going to start to talk about how digital technologies must be deployed in a way that keeps the citizen engaged and keeps the citizen notified and informed of where they are in the process. I think the most frustrating thing dealing with any application process for any service, whether private or public, is just your application or your request disappearing into a dark place and not hearing about it for a number of weeks. And so we want to change that approach through the policy framework, but also here's an example of where we want to do that in a specific deliverable, a specific digital platform that's being deployed. I think from a next step perspective, in terms of these specific projects, what we've done in the first quarter is we've developed a proposal and we've handed it over to the department. We are engaging with the state IT agency to be able to bring them together with that department to enable the deployment of that technology platform. We will, of course, continue to work with other departments. In the second quarter, we've identified, again, in Mpumalanga, a different process. And I think some of the challenges we have, and I can share with the committee, is that when you come with these requests to departments, you need to have a willing buyer on the other side. As we want to assist departments must be open for that assistance. But we continue to work with Mpumalanga, and we've reached out to Limpopo, KZN Education, the Northwest, and different departments in Mpumalanga as well, in order to identify further processes. One, that we can meet our target in the DPSA in terms of our APP, but two, also that we can add value and create some hype in departments, in provinces around digital technologies and the value of digital proposals. So to summarize, Chair and members, we will continue the work of the policy framework from a DPSA perspective. We, of course, a lot of our work is in supporting those five determinations and directives that we published not so long ago. 2022 is not a long time ago. We need to follow through that in terms of its implementation and making sure that it hits the target in terms of enabling that digital infrastructure, enabling the digital environment for those departments, so that when solution proposals come, so that when, for instance, CITA says we are ready to deploy technology across government, that the basic building blocks are in place. So we continue to do that in terms of supporting our work on the directives that we publish as the DPSA. We will continue and drive the digital government policy framework to its completion together with the DCDT, together with the state IT agency, in order to make sure that we have a coherent story, we have a coherent plan in terms of how we intend digitalizing government. So I think we should have an opportunity, we would request an opportunity, let me put it to you that way, to be able to come and share that work when we have it in a state that it is shareable. But it's quite exciting work that we are working with our partners around that. And of course, as we continue to deliver on our APP and our AOP targets, we will continue to work with these departments around these digitalization solution proposals. Chair, I thank you for the time and the opportunity.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Abubakar. The next presentation, honorable members, is CITA. And I don't see there's no minister or deputy minister of communication here. So I will give the CITA to present.
Morning, Chair. Can you hear me, Chair?
Good morning.
Morning, Chair. You are speaking to Simpiwe Potiwe. Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Potiwe. Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, Chair. Good morning to you, Chair, the Minister, Deputy Minister, the members of the committee. My name is Simpiwe Potiwe, representing the DCDT. Chair, I've been reliably informed that our minister, together with the deputy minister, did send an apology that they won't be able to attend the meeting together with the DG as they are attending a cabinet committee meeting. With that said, I would like then to, through you, Chair, to give CITA the platform, and I would just introduce the team that is led by them, by the chairperson, Mr. Kirubin Pillay, together with the MD of CITA, to then take us through the presentation on the intervention that they've come up with to improve the service delivery in the public sector. Through you, Chair, can the team then make the presentation. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Kuti, but we have kept missing you or missing your voice. But they can present whoever that is going to present on behalf of the seat.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Bongani Mabaso. I'm the Managing Director of CITA. With your permission and that of the Minister, can we go ahead and present?
Yes, Mr. Mabaso, you can present.
Thank you very much. Minister, Chairperson, and colleagues, the presentation will be on interventions to improve system downtime and impact on service delivery in the public sector. And the focus of the presentation will be on network stability and the interventions that we are putting together to improve the network uptime and availability, the upgrades that we are busy doing in our networks to address issues such as some that we mentioned around limited capacity bandwidth in some of the links, and also ensuring that we can continue to accelerate digitization through connectivity. So that is the focus of the presentation, Minister and Chairperson. At a high level, I'm just going to give the high level points that we'll talk to, and then I'll hand over to a colleague of mine who will then take you through the detailed presentation. The first thing is, last year we had quite a lot of challenges as CETA with regards to the network uptime, where the network uptime had dropped below 97%, which is our targeted point from a raw numbers perspective with regards to uptime. Since that point in time, there's been a lot of efforts that have been done to make sure that that network can be stabilized. The first thing is, we've appointed a service provider to look at installing redundancy, which is redundant links across our network, to ensure that we can improve the uptime. And you'll get more details about that in the presentation. This has resulted in the uptime increasing to more than 99% on average in this financial year. And in fact, throughout the year thus far, the network availability has been green, you know, from a target perspective. The next initiative that we've been doing is looking at the upgrades of the network through the Software Defined Network Initiative. So this initiative is a countrywide initiative for us to modernize the core network of CETA to ensure that we can upgrade the minimum capacity in terms of bandwidth and ensure that we can be able to leverage new connectivity services within the core network. The next initiative refers to remote environmental management solutions, which allows us to be able to remotely manage the switching centers that are spread across the entire CETA network so that we can be able to remotely diagnose when there's an issue in any of the switching centers and to be able to resolve it remotely. And then the last one is around initiatives that we've done to improve resilience and improve stability of the core network. So those are the four initiatives that we've done, Minister, Chairperson, and colleagues, to improve the system uptime, which is why the average for the month of August was 99.14% uptime, which is well above the target that we have set for ourselves as CETA. I'm now going to hand over to my colleague, Musa Khumalo, to then take you through the detailed presentation. And then we're happy to take and address any questions as directed by the chairperson. So through you, chairperson, I'm going to invite Musa Khumalo to then take us through the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, MD. I think Minister, Deputy Minister, Chair, and colleagues. So if we just go through, I think the slides, I won't touch on all of them. If you just look at slide number four, it really just depicts some of the challenges that Dr. Tamabaso has alluded to, you know, in terms of the single points of failure that we've had on our network. And this is really directly related to the current architecture of the network. You must understand that this network was designed, you know, some years ago. I mean, it was 2007, you know, when we came up with this design. At that point, it was sufficient enough to, you know, to address the requirements at the time. But things have evolved, you know, technologies have evolved, demand for more capacity, you know, because we also migrating slowly, you know, onto fiber-based connections, you know, as opposed to the copper type of connections. We find that in 2023, this particular design starts presenting, you know, some challenges as it relates to single points of failure, which we are addressing via the the software-defined network modernization program. I think over and above that, Chair, we are also looking at, replacing the low-speed links between our switching centers, which we also call them nodes, through the appointment of a Layer 2 service provider that is going to then implement high-speed links. If you look at slide number 5, it also talks to some of the interventions that have already been implemented to circumvent the frequent network downtimes, that we've experienced in the past. And I can just maybe touch a little bit on what we experienced last year, I think between January and, somewhere around September, October. We really, really were struggling with some of our core links, which kept on failing, every second day or so, largely impacting, customer connections that would reside in a particular region or province, within the architecture of the design. Now, what tends to happen when we look at the single points of failure on the previous slide, slide 4, is that because the network is designed in such a manner that a province becomes a region and it aggregates to one single POP at that particular region. For instance, you get your Northern Cape, your Eastern Cape, your Western Cape, all aggregating via the Cape Town POP, which then becomes a single point of failure. If Cape Town goes off, then all the other provinces that link to that particular regional POP will be isolated. We have then since appointed, as Dr. Mabaso mentioned earlier, an alternative service provider that then brings about additional redundancy in terms of those core links. Those are long distance fiber links that interconnect our switching centers. With those interventions, we've seen that there's a significant improvement where we have already implemented in terms of availability. We have not experienced any downtime that would affect, customers in those particular instances, except for where we are still busy with the implementations. And you will see, Chair, on slide number, I just want to quickly go to the slides. You will see that in terms of what has been completed, it's reflected on slide number 8 and slide number 9. On slide number 11, we do reflect those interventions that are still ongoing, which are planned to be completed by end of this month. And you will notice, and I think in recent times, most of the outages that would have been experienced are mostly centered around these particular POPs. Your Middelburg in Mpumalanga, Nelspruit have been problematic. And we are then implementing the redundant links to ensure that then we improve in terms of the availability. This is besides, Chair, issues that we do face every now and then as they relate to the Eskom load shedding impact, on our performance. I think we've been very, very responsive in that regard. Our backup systems have proven to be quite sufficient to at least handle the undesirable loads of levels of load shedding. So we don't really experience too much downtime related to load shedding, except for the core links themselves going down. I think as part of then the long-term solution, we are really, really looking at a complete redesign of our core network to then completely eliminate the single points of failure through, if you look at slide 13, Chair, to then introduce regional rings, from a transmission point of view, fully redundant architecture that we are then going to implement. In fact, we are already in the process of implementing this particular architecture And we do envisage that it would be fully activated by end of July 2024, which will then obviously then ensure that we sustain the levels of availability that are above the 99.5% level. Chair, I think with that, I would like to then hand over hand back to MD. I don't know if MD you want to add anything over and above this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Musa. So, Chairperson, this is our presentation, which was just highlighting those four areas that I mentioned around how we've stabilized the network within CETA. And I think the key takeaway is that right now the network is stable because of the installation of the redundancy. And we are busy then with the core upgrade that will be running, as Musa has mentioned, that we'd like to have completed by the end of next year, which will also bring much increased capacity, which I think everyone would appreciate from a client perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabaso. I think we have done with all the presentation, honorable members, and they were all detailed, and I will then request honorable members to raise their hands for comments, questions, or clarities from the three presentations. Okay, I only see 2, 4, 5 hands. I will then take one. I will start with Honorable Kibi, followed by Honorable Gondwe, then Honorable Maneli, Honorable Komane, and Honorable Ntuli will be the last one. I've said Honorable Kibi, Honorable Gondwe, Honorable Maneli, Honorable Komane, Honorable Notnahal, and then the last person will be Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you. Good morning to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, colleagues, and everybody who is on the platform. Honorable Chair, can I please switch off my video? Honorable Chair, let me appreciate and welcome the presentation by CPSI, DPSA, and CETA. I think the presentations are clear, with also recommendations or attempts to resolve or to respond to certain challenges that they find themselves in. Honorable Chair, on the CPSI, the presentation, colleagues, lacks a smart or a specific measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound approach to elucidating its plans, limiting the ability to monitor and evaluate the implementation of e-government services. The Center for Public Service Innovation merely outlines its project aspirations without a defined operating model and its comprehensive resource needs and the capacity required beyond the developers highlighted, which is still minimal. Now, Honorable Chair, my question to CPSI would be, what financial resource allocation is required to develop internal capabilities to innovate through research and development capabilities. In relation to the system view proposal, that should be the role of the Center for Public Service Innovation versus the role of CITAS. And my second one is, how is the entity's plan aligned with the science and innovation decadal plan? With DPSA, Honorable Chair, on the DPSA business process modernization, to map out processes in order to achieve improvements in access, efficiency, and quality. Business process modernization is about keeping pace with new technologies and tools and the adoption of new values and practices to solve existing and possible future business problems. The department is focusing on the environmental assessment business process, supporting Limpopo, COCTA, KZN, Education, Northwest Human Settlements, Mpumalanga Departments and Agriculture, Rural Development, you name them. The department does not have a strategic implementation plan to attain the objective of digitization government services for the whole of government by 2024. The department only has a few targeted projects of the business processes modernization program. Therefore, Honorable Chair, my question would be to the department, to DPSA. I only have one question for DPSA, Honorable Chair. What are the other three targeted projects for automation as per the department's annual performance plan? And what is the intended impact of such projects? Noting that the digitization program has a target of the implementation of the e-government strategy for the whole of government by 2024. Is this target attainable, Honorable Chair? And my last one goes to the CETA. What has been the core level availability in the period of September 2022 till March relative to the period of April 2023 to August 2023? And then my last one is, what triggered the decline in core network availability from 99.68% in the April 2023 to 98.18% in May 2023? And what interventions led to an improvement in June 2023? Thank you, Honorable Chair. Those are my questions.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Kibi. Honorable Dr. Kondwe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and greetings to everybody on the virtual platform. Chair, I have a number of questions. My first questions, Chair, are to CPSI. They stated in their presentation that they only have two employees that are charged with the development of new digitization projects, and two projects are under development and 15 projects are currently in the pipeline. So my question then becomes, will those 15 projects in the pipeline ever be realized and developed when CPSI has two people charged with developing new digitization projects? And I want to know, how long will it take for those projects that are currently in the pipeline How long is it going to take for those projects to be realized? Because it's concerning, Chairperson, that they only have two employees that are charged with the development of new digitization projects. Yet, CPSI plays such a pivotal role when it comes to digitization right across the public service. So I don't think having two people charged with the developing of a new digitization project will ever, you know, will ensure that we see a benefit in the public service, because there are two projects that are underway and 15 that are currently in the pipeline. And then with regards to the two projects that are currently under development, namely the EMS, patient transfer and the digitizing and virtualizing Tucson service centers. My interest is around the latter project, which is the Tucson service centers, digitizing and virtualizing a project. Tucson centers, the ones we visited have indicated that they have serious connectivity issues. And connectivity, Chairperson, you will know, in some instances translates to service delivery. So I want to know whether this particular project will help in terms of resolving the connectivity issues that these service centers have, and just to understand what the impact of that project will be on the efficiency of the efficiency and the effectiveness of Tucson service centers. And Chair, I want to again raise my concerns around the capacity issues that they've highlighted in the presentation. This is CPSI. I'm actually shocked that CPSI has one permanent position for a developer. And I doubt we'll ever, experience a fully fledged e-government at this rate if we only have one permanent position for a developer in CPSI. I want to understand how many system developers does government have across the board. And they've mentioned that in instances where you have these system developers, government is able to save millions. So I want to also understand that in instances where government does not have system developers in different departments, how much are we actually spending as government in outsourcing these services? And then my questions to CETA Chairperson. The first question is that in the problem statement part of their presentation, they attribute a number of causes to the downtime experienced by government's core network. So they, and these causes include load shedding and the destruction or vandalism of the rail network. So I want to understand that prior to the increased load shedding, I recall vividly that departments such as the Department of Home Affairs perpetually experienced downtime when it came to their systems. And we've been on oversight and we've experienced, the reality of the harsh reality of this downtime on people accessing services. And I remember that some of these Home Affairs offices that we visited, they would lay the blame squarely at the feet of CETA in terms of the downtime. So I want to understand, what has CETA done to actually try and resolve these chronic connectivity issues that is experienced at some offices of the Department of Home Affairs? Because, as I indicated earlier, in some instances, connectivity issues, translate into no service delivery, no services being rendered at all. My second question to CETA is, in their presentation, they indicate that the single source procurement approach was approved by Treasury. And the implementation of the identified additional links got underway. And this process should be completed by the 30th of September, which is less than 2 weeks away. So I want to understand, I want a confirmation from CETA that, whether this process is still on track and is said to be completed, by the end of next week, and they've also indicated that, you know, as regards to the issue of the same level of redundancy on all call links, that they've indicated that that will also be done by the 30th of September. So I want to get an idea of whether, you know, both these processes are still on track and whether they will be completed by the end of next week. And I want to also get an idea of what the total cost of these two processes is. By the two processes, I mean the implementation cost of the identified additional links, as well as the expansion of redundancy on all core links. My last set of questions, Chairperson, go to the DPSA. Chairperson, so the first question to the DPSA is, outside of the BPM program, which was initiated in the 2021-22 financial year, what other programs has the DPSA initiated which are also aimed at modernizing business processes in the public service? And I want to understand what the impact of this BPM program has been on service delivery, because, hey, I'm asking this because I remain greatly concerned that despite being charged with establishing norms and standards in relation to information management and electronic government in the public service, I feel like we're not really seeing this responsibility of the DPSA coming through and creating a felt or tangible difference in the lives of our citizens. And the department's shortcomings in this regard become very apparent when issues arise, such as the issue of, you know, public servants benefiting from grants. The fact that the two systems at DPSA and social development were not speaking to one another, in other words, you know, no one was able to pick up that, you know, you've got public servants that are receiving, it remains a concern. And the DPSA is charged with establishing norms and standards in relation to electronic government in the public service and ensuring that, you know, we have, although we have e-government, it increases the efficiency and the effectiveness of government. And so I'm worried that it's not really we're not really seeing this role of the part of the DPSA really translating into differences, tangible differences in the lives of our citizens. And the shortcomings keep on, you know, rearing their ugly head whenever there's an issue. We realize that, no, but we're not quite where we are. We should be, rather, in terms of e-government, because our systems are still not speaking to one another. And hence, we then have issues of public servants, receiving grants and no one being able to pick it up. And then I want to understand from DPSA, why did they only work with four government departments in relation to the BPM program? I mean, what informed the selection of these particular government departments? And when will they be working with other government departments? In other words, when will other government departments when are other government departments likely to benefit from this BPM program? Chair, that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Kondwe. Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to colleague on the platform. Chairperson, I think I also got a number of questions, though I believe that the latter has spoken so much about those. However, Chair, for the department, I would like to know, Chair, as to what is the projection of the department on the impact of introducing the automation of the staff or labor capacity. Chairperson, coming to CPSI, I want to know, Chairperson, as to what do they mean by wanting to reduce the cost of program one? And also, probably if it can be unpacked in terms of the EMS.
Honorable Maneli, can you repeat your question? We have lost you.
You've lost me, Chairperson. Okay. Yes. Do I repeat from the DPSA or from the CPSI, Chairperson?
CPSI.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair, again. I was saying in terms of the CPSI, can they tell us what do they mean by wanting to reduce the cost of program one? And also, Chairperson, can be unpacked as to what it means in terms of the EMS patient transfer as per the presentation? Also, Chairperson, I want to know as to what are the identified legislative barriers that exist there. Then my last question in relation to CPSI will be, what interventions does the CPSI propose to expect at the implementation of the e-government services? Chairperson, coming to CETA, I would like to ask if whether the FAP has been engaged on how best infrastructure can be prevented from this economic sabotage that we are experiencing. And also in terms of cybersecurity, I would like to know as to will the new system enhance cybersecurity now or not? And also, Chester, observing that there's a lot of vandalism. I want to check, Chester, how severe is this vandalism and theft of cables at CETA? And probably what can be done to protect the infrastructure? Chair, we're also noting that the network performance over the period of April 23 to August 23 has been available at rates that are above 98%. So what is the translated impact of this level of connectivity challenges? Then my last question, Chair, in relation to CETA will be that is the entity project within the expected completion of the 30th September? I think the previous speaker spoke to this one. Whether are we going to be able to meet the deadline or not, if we can just be responded to those questions as well, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Maneli, Honorable Koman.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to fellow colleagues and everyone on the platform. And let us also welcome the presentations and raise questions as follows. One would first start by raising questions to the CPSI, and this statement should be recorded. Because CPSI cannot pride itself about the cost saving, while the same money is being used to outsource services at other levels where the CPSI does not go to. Chair, then the first question would then be, what are the plans in place to reduce the cost of program one, and what would be the anticipated challenges thereof? And then in the position of a developer, Chair, one permanent position, they have raised that the issue of one permanent developer. So one would then ask, would say, how many developers would be sufficient, and what does it need to be done for maybe increasing that developer? And Chair, still on CPSI. Given the fact that there's a moratorium by the National Treasury, how do they plan to have this moratorium lifted? And what are the benefits that would come with the lifting of that moratorium? And Chair, when we go to CETA, CETA has experienced system downtime in several times, which has mainly impacted on the service delivery. And one would then ask, what are the causes of this downtime, and how are they being addressed, and how soon will they be addressed? Because we cannot sit in a country where service delivery, the limping service delivery is being worsened. And Chair, how will this, why has CETA waited this long to address the disadvantages, as they have clearly said that the system was done in 2007? Have they not anticipated these challenges given the growth, given the technology and everything? So why have they waited this long? Or what were the challenges of them upgrading since
2007. And then, Chair, one would as well ask the same question to CETA, which was asked by the two latter speakers. Will this system, will this new system enhance the cybersecurity? And how do they think it will? And Chair, lastly on CETA, how possible is that two projects will be completed by the end of this month, which is a week away, not too Honorable Gondwe? And then how will they be completed versus sticking to the time versus the challenges that they have been exposed to? And then finally, Chair, to the department. You see, Chair, one is very concerned because our department is not doing as it should be doing. I want to echo the same sentiment, Uti. Should we have an effective department, we could have a long track, and we could have long seen when the public servants are dipping or are benefiting from the same grants that were meant for the disadvantaged. And it has, to now, to date, it is not clear how their interdepartmental communications is being done, so that they can then their systems could correlate and speak to one another. And the question then would then be, with CETA having the challenges that was reported in various departments through our oversight chair, that also impacted on the service level so much. How or what are the improvements in place put by the department to make this to alleviate these challenges, and how are they then going to navigate through those systems that we hope they might have put in place? Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Komane, Honorable Notnahan.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everybody on the platform. I've been covered by most of the questions, so I've got four questions for DPSA, which will be the following. Which other areas has the department targeted for business processes modernization in line with the e-government strategy of 2017? My next question will be, what measures will the department implement to ensure organs of state prioritize e-government interventions through adequate resourcing for plans? My third question will be, what alignments exist with the e-government plan and recommendations from the Presidential Fourth Industrial Revolution Commission? And my last question will be, what interventions does the department propose to expedite the implementation of e-government services across the organs of state? I thank you, Chair.
Honorable Notnahal, we can't hear you.
Thank you, Chair. Did none of the questions? Sorry, I've just got flu, so my voice is not very audible. Must I repeat all four questions again?
We didn't hear you, my.
But can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. You can proceed.
Thank you. I'm not close to my computer. Thank you. Excuse for my voice. I wanted to ask four questions for DPSA because I've been covered by the other honourable members with the other departments, the questions that they already asked. So my first question is, which other areas has the department targeted for business processes modernization in line with the e-government strategy of 2017. My second question will be, what measures will the department implement to ensure organs of state prioritize e-government interventions through adequate resourcing for plans? My third question to the department will be, what alignment exists with the e-government plan and recommendations from the Presidential Fourth Industrial Revolution Commission? And then my last question, what interventions does the department propose to expedite the implementation of e-government services across organs of state? That will be my questions. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Notnagal. At the last hand, it's Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, greetings to everyone, in particular the minister in our midst and her team. Chairperson, I would love to join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation and noting the hard work that is being done by our government although one would also notice some gaps here and there, but safe to say I'm mostly covered by the previous speakers. In terms of CPSI, I would love to commend CPSI with the innovations that they really establish from time to time. And also raise my concern on their being short-staffed, hence one was looking at the moratorium in this regard as to how are they going to sort of fix the positions for spearheading the work at hand. One question to CPSI is that I wanted to check if they can further explain the bottom up and in-house versus Big Bang top-down service providers in relation to the e-government implementation plan adopted by them as CPSI. Going to the department, I think I want to add my word to check the interventions that they have in this regard in terms of e-government service across organs of state. But I was, Chair, I was very much taken by the mentioning of cybersecurity. And I don't know, I'm subject for correction, I don't know whether I was understanding it very well. Because for me, the cybersecurity should be in twofold. In terms of the information, and the confidentiality in the digitization world. And again, echo my words to one of the speakers who mentioned the cable theft that is massive in our country. And one is also is worried about the infrastructure per se. The presentations are very sort of informative to us here. But in terms of the good things that have been mentioned here, I remember, I think it's CPSI mentioned the enabling methods of the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Health. Now I'm a bit worried about the infrastructure. The transfers, the service providing to the community that will lead to the community not traveling a lot. Sometimes you can go to a clinic and not to be transferred to a big hospital, but instead the big hospital will work on you whilst you are at the clinic. Now I'm looking at the infrastructure in that regard to say, are we presenting giving such glossy and wonderful presentations, are we accommodating all areas of our country, particularly the remote areas? Because for me, some of the things may happen better between Soweto and Chrisan Baragwanath. And only to find that between Ngwavuma or Emmaus, not even a clinic, Emmaus Hospital, and Albert Elthuli, Inkosi Albert Elthuli Hospital in Durban, things might not work the same through infrastructure. And Chairperson, I think one is also looking forward to what has been presented by CITA. And apparently, I've been covered by some of my colleagues, most of my colleagues, in questions. But I think in overall, the infrastructure is core. They may mention the moving from copper to fiber, but is the infrastructure allowing all that? And again, is the cyber security enabling all the work that has been mentioned here to be secured? Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. That's the end of the questions from honorable members. And I will then request that the presenters respond as per the questions before the committee, by committee members. I will start with the CPSI, and then followed by CETA. The department would be the last one, and then obviously I will hand over to the minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks, Honorable Members, for all the inputs and questions posed. I'll take a few, and then I will request Mr. Skonrad to come in to respond to some of the questions. Honorable Kibi, with regard to your first comment, I was not sure whether it was a comment or a question around the approach and model. We do have an approach that we use at CPSI in terms of how we carry out our work in this field. In terms of the financial resources, over the MTF would need 4.3 million to capacitate the CPSI to a level that can be optimum. It stretched from 2.6 to 10.6 to 2.2 million over the 3 years. What we've done in the process, because there is a limitation in terms of we've not been getting additional funding from Treasury, we have actually moved some of the money from goods and services, responding to a question around consultancy, how much we spend in terms of outsourcing. We moved that money to bring the capacity in so that we limit, outsourcing of services and so forth. So that's a strategy that we also want to encourage departments to look at, to minimize, outsourcing some of these services. Here we'll talk to the alignment of the to the decadal plan, and to Honorable Gondwe, Pierre will take the first two questions. But in terms of capacity constraints, we know we do have capacity constraints, but we've taken some action to try and boost our capacity to a certain level, although you can only move so much from goods and services because you still have to run the organization with the goods and services budget. But I'm hoping that DPSA would be able to respond to how many are they? Do we have system developers in the public service? All I know is that the presenter for DPSA, always talks about 0.3% of IT skills in the public service. He can unpack that, but most of those are people who do desktop support. You don't have anyone, very few people in the public service. Actually, I think in his last presentation, less than 70 are in cybersecurity, and that's very scary. If you are taking go into digital transformation, cybersecurity becomes, a core in terms of the success, because systems will be hacked at one time, or attempts are always there to hack a system. Even our personal information is always at risk. So you need to make sure that we top up skills, the right skills in terms of cybersecurity, data analysts, and all those system developers, to make sure that we do have the requisite skills to avoid outsourcing once we move into the digital transformation journey. Pierre will then respond to the first two questions. Coming to Honorable Maneli, Pierre will take up the one around Program 1 to explain what it means. Some of the legislative barriers that we have, that are there, that we are faced with, it's that we have different acts that govern different parts of the digital journey for South Africa. And I think that sort of poses a challenge in terms of, who does what. There's the PFMA, they've also put in, Treasury has put measures to say you need to hang on with any internal digitization of processes because we are working on IFMS. But now because IFMS is where it is now, what happens to the departments? Should they wait for how long for them to deal with the challenges that they have in departments? So that's one part. Issues around how do we bring in, because there's a lot of innovations that can solve our, for instance, e-recruitment. The solutions are there, but they're outside government, you know, in terms of social innovators. I'm not talking about multinational companies and so forth. I'm talking about social innovators, entrepreneurs, youth that bring in solutions in some of the, you know, programs that we have. But the question is, how do you then bring it into the public service? You have to follow processes. You have to get three quotations. We need agile procurement processes that would allow us to share IP with these young innovators and bring them in at a cheaper cost. But what Pierre has said is that we also see in departments, system developers are starting to come up with solutions for government. You know, I know for Eastern Cape, one of the departments, they came up with their own e-leave system. You know, they came up with e-recruitment system. A number of departments are implementing those. So there's something that is happening at different levels in departments, in provinces, although one would wish this were implemented, throughout the country instead of in pockets there and there. So the legislative barriers are some of those. Our JE processes are not agile enough, how do you bring in a system developer? It's something new in the public service. If we were to hire, you know, specialists in robotics, is our JE system ready for that kind of bringing in, you know, somebody with a specialist in drones, in robotics, or, you know, all those new skills? I think there's something that needs to happen in that instance, because where do you benchmark? Unlike now, if I were to fill a post for an admin clerk, there is a benchmark post that DPA has set. But if I'm looking for a specialist in robotics or artificial intelligence, we don't have those benchmarks. So it means we need to make sure that we start, changing the narrative around the kind of posts that we have. Honorable Maneli, in terms of some of the interventions that I would propose, for instance, as I said, the 0.3% IT skills that are not really aligned to the 4IR era that we are in. One would want to see, for instance, NSG starting to offer some of these courses, sending people to do basic drone courses, send people to NSG to study what artificial intelligence is, what robotics is. So that is one area that I think we need to look at as to how we make sure that we don't rely on service providers outside to capacitate our own people. Another strategy would be to upskill ICT staff that we already have for them to get these new other skills. In one of our settings, we used an example that we used to have what we call a typing pool in many government departments, but with the evolving times, we no longer have typing pools. We're able to upskill ourselves as public service to be able to type our own documents. So it's not going to take, you know, jobs from other people, but it will create new avenues for upskilling of public servants. I think Pierre will add some of the proposal in terms of what can be done to make sure that we change the narrative around e-government services. I'm not sure what is in there, what can be improved in some of these acts. I know I've been told there's a ministerial committee that looks at digital transformation. We need to clean up that space because the issues of many role players that are, you know, disjointed in a way, it's also killing the process. As one member has already mentioned, that we can talk about bringing in these solutions, but if the infrastructure is not robust enough, then it becomes a problem in terms of how do we move forward. Currently, many departments are just, Home Affairs is just doing digitization, which is taking manual paper and putting it into a digital space. They still need to, you know, digitalize, create processes and then move into digital transformation. But if the infrastructure keeps failing, downtime is there, it sort of hampers the process. The issue around the unique ID, many countries that have gone the digital transformation course, they started with making sure that the manual processes are correct before you digitize, and also creating a unique ID so that as I go to one, to Home Affairs or to a hospital, my information pops up. I don't have to go into different systems, you know, issues around interoperability of systems and so forth. Honorable Komani, as I said, we have, you know, the issue of cost saving versus outsourcing. At CPSI, we're trying to cut down on outsourcing, moving goods and services. We've been lucky so far. National Treasury has approved moving some budget from goods and services to compensation. And yes, we've been able to create a bit of capacity within, but we need to do more. As I said, we need about 40 million over 3 years to get it to an optimum level. Pierre will take the questions around cost of program one and how many system developers we need. Yes, the concerns around there are two moratorium. I think the first one, I stand to be corrected, members, honorable members. One cost containment measure, moratorium, was with the National Treasury saying departments should not procure or put system in place for e-leave and all those things because we are waiting for IFMS. The other moratorium is what is happening now with the cost containment measures that came into place from the 15th of September. The plan for us to get more system developers, we need to make sure that this becomes a critical post. It must be viewed if we want to move towards digital transformation. The issue of system developers and other IT-related skills like cybersecurity specialists, they need to be seen as critical posts, so that we are able to continue to get them on board. I'll give you an example at CPSI. We have one permanent post, but we had a bit of savings because we had one early retirement and not due to ill health. We were able to bring in a second system developer on contract. That contract ends in November, but the system developer found a job, leaves mid-October. We need to put a plan in place because it means the project will then be affected because that person has got a better offer elsewhere outside the public service. So those are some of the challenges, but we are working, with the team to make sure that we are meeting, I think, tomorrow or so to see what the cost containment measures are saying so that we can put a plan in place to bring in somebody to take over from the one that is, resigning from service. Pierre will also take up the rest of the questions from Honorable Ntuli regarding explaining the bottom and up and Big Bang approach. I think I've covered everything, but if there's anything that I didn't cover, I hope Pierre will cover. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to go through the other questions as well in terms of the respective roles of the CPSI and CITA, we believe that there's significant space for both of us and the DCDT to operate. From our side, we identify innovative practices and then support in a bottom-up approach the further development and rollout of these. From CITA side, we expect to provide the kind of infrastructure in terms of broadband connectivity, in terms of cloud-based activity and so forth. What we would like to see is that internal developers in government is prioritized and not necessarily outsourced or left for CITA to help digitize internal services. In terms of the decadal plan, we're working closely with DSI. The white paper on science and innovation is very clear in that the DSI and CPSI should work together when it comes to innovation in the public sector. We've also supported the DSI in convening strategic foresight sessions in terms of the planning of planning around deliverables of the decadal plan, and therefore we have to work hand in glove. CPSI is on the demand side of innovation. So what we're trying to do is to bridge the gap between the challenges within departments and what the DSI through its entities are then developing and supporting. A very good example is the digital fingerprint project where we've spoken about, where the CSIR is providing the technology, and through the piloting that we have done, we've also improved the technology in terms of fingerprint recognition. This can now be expanded to hospitals, for example, where we identify patients, unidentified patients, and so forth. So there's a hand-in-glove work, not only with CITA and DPSA and DCDT, but also with DSI. In terms of the number of employees that we need, I think the AED already mentioned, from our side, we are very conservative at the moment in terms of if we can start putting together two teams with various capabilities, that would help us to deal with the demand that is ever growing. Two teams of about six developers, and we've seen with countries around the world that are doing this, to have a more flat structure in terms of systems development, and then support the further more sustainable adoption within departments. That is working very well. But what it requires is a cultural shift within the public service broadly. We've seen that countries like Rwanda, Kenya, Mauritius, that are competing with us in the top spot for the continent in the e-government survey, they've taken deliberate decisions in terms of digitizing. Therefore, they're not asking questions about exclusion, they're asking questions about inclusion. And therefore, as a design principle, they make sure that all citizens are included. And that's what we want to take in the Virtual Tusong Center project that Honorable Gondwe asked about. We've presented last week, but in short, because of some of these challenges that we are faced with at the virtual centers, and sadly, I've seen in the news that a Tusong Center was burned down yesterday or overnight, and what we're trying to do is creating access for citizens through various channels, not only through mobile phones and so on, but various channels, so that they don't have to go to a Tusong Center. But to do that, it's a long task because we need to integrate systems in the back office. If we are successful in the various phases, also integrating 4IR technologies as coming from the special commission set up by the president, then we can really address some of the citizens' concerns. But importantly, the back office need to be able to integrate, and services need to integrate. And there is a lot of work still to be done. In terms of the question then around the reduction of cost in Program 1, I'll use two examples. One example is many departments, especially for lower level posts, receive applications in the excess of 2,000, 3,000, even 10,000 applications. What then happens is that data capturers are hired so that these CVs are captured because they are delivered by hand and so forth, at a huge cost to Program 1. That's just one example. If this process is automated and verified, then those resources can rather be used towards appointing systems developers in-house. The same with supply chain processes. Once it's automated, the opportunity for manipulating the system or corruption is reduced. The adjudication happens much faster, and therefore one can reduce the cost. The same with compliance reporting. The moment it is automated and integrated in terms of performance management, it means that it reduces the number of hours and the number of people. In many departments, and those present here have the same challenge, Program 1, the size and cost of running Program 1 is equal to the size of the rest of the department, or very similar. And what automation and digitization can do is significantly reducing the number of people as well as the cost. It doesn't mean firing people, but it means that those skills are then better used for digitization. I hope those examples would be helpful. In terms of the EMS project that we're currently busy with, the challenge that the department is faced with is that the transfer of planned patient or planned patient transfer is abused by citizens. It is a cheap way of catching a taxi from one facility to the other. The management of people during the process is challenging because you may not know who should return from the facility once they have done their consultations. So what we are doing here is making sure that every patient that is booked is then linked to a seat, as well as for the trip there and the trip back, and therefore the department can much better utilize the resources. They know whether they need a 10-seat or a 15-seat vehicle, and we can also then use GPS-related technologies to make sure that the optimal route are followed. So in essence, it would help increase the efficiency of the department in moving patients from one facility to the other. We are at the stage where the piloting will commence, and we should, by the end of the financial year, be having a very viable product in that regard. In terms of the explaining the bottom up, it is what we meant with having in-house capability where a department is faced with a specific challenge and then start working on it with their own in-house capacity instead of outsourcing it to a third party, to a private sector service provider that would then come from the outside. It means that those who are experiencing the challenges, the specific branch, the specific unit, work then very closely with the systems developers and then develop and design the solution. In the same way that we are doing the EMS solution now, sitting here with the experts in EMS and designing the solution with them, testing it, coming back for iterations, and then refining it until we roll it out. In that way, we deal with all the challenges and we solve them as we go, and we don't sit with a product that is not meeting the needs of the administration or citizens. In terms of the infrastructure that Honorable Ntuli was referring to, and specifically to KZN, sometimes we are solving the challenge through the design. KZN have health have some of these in-house developers that we've worked closely with, and what they are doing is to actually those challenges in terms of connectivity and the rural clinic, they take that as part of solving when they design the solution. So they've actually been very successful in rolling out telehealth solutions, having virtual consultations, again, COVID assisted in expediting this. And they are actually very good in terms of reaching even the most far-flung facilities. That doesn't mean that there are challenges, not challenges. It means that when we see that there's a connectivity issue, we're also trying to then involve the relevant service providers as well as the relevant departments in terms of creating those connections. Within the previous presentation, we've mentioned the issue of zero rating of government services. It is part of rolling it out, but we've not mentioned it in this meeting because we're focusing here on internal systems. Honorable Chair, I think that brings us to the end of the response, but we appreciate the concern of this committee in terms of the capacity issues. It is really something that we need to prioritize across the public service, not only in CPSI. CPSI is just a proxy of the challenges that we are being faced. But we do believe that we can really make a significant impact on digitization if we have the right employees and the right skills, and if we reprioritize in terms of the framework that the DPSA has presented, where we digitize by design. Thank you, Chair. If there are anything I've missed, AED can maybe just highlight that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Skonrad. If there's no other person from CPSI who want to speak on questions from members, I will then quickly go to CITA.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's Dr. Bawasa speaking again. So I'll just try and handle the questions one by one, and then my colleague Umuso Khumalo will also come in if I skip any of the questions. So the first question from Honorable Kibi. The reason why the network performance, so your question was essentially around what were the core challenges that caused that that poor performance. We had between June and September last year, 2022, our availability levels dropped below the threshold of 97% in some of the provinces. Since the interventions that we've put in place, stabilization has occurred. And since October 2022, we've seen it start to increase, which is why I mentioned earlier that even this year, all of our indicators from a network uptime perspective have been met thus far. The reasons for that were the service provider that we are using could unfortunately not meet the SLA targets that we have set for them for various reasons. Despite numerous engagements from between CETA and the service provider to rectify the situation. That is why we also then went ahead and appointed a second service provider to provide that dual redundancy links, which many members have asked questions around the timeline. And to say that already in the presentation, we've prioritized the critical areas that did not have redundant links and had the biggest impact from a service delivery perspective. And members will note in the presentation that those have already been installed and have already been completed. So it's not even a matter of the end of September. The end of September date is other redundant areas that we wanted to improve with redundancy that we wanted to include. But the most critical areas have already been installed with redundant links, which is why you've seen the performance improve to the level that it has. I might as well answer the question that various members also asked around whether that timeline for September will be met. And I can happily confirm that yes, all is on track with regards to meeting that timeline for end of September, as is part of our rollout with the service provider that we've put in place. In terms of the service provider that was failing, we're already at CETA, and this is, I'm just mentioning it here for information. Applying penalties to that service provider and seeing how we can then exit that contract. But that is something that we are doing internally as CETA and should not impact the government departments. I think the main point of takeaway here is that the impact, the positive impact that we're looking for by installing redundant links is already starting to bear fruit as most of the critical areas have already been installed with those redundancies. The question from Honorable Gondre on the Chusong service centers. So CETA is not necessarily directly involved in supplying connectivity to Chusong centers. There are some that where we do it. However, this is something that is part of the broader DCDT program with regards to SA Connect. that they're planning to include the two system centers. So they're not necessarily all covered by CETA at this stage. I'm hoping that answers that question. The question from Honorable Maneli with regards to the impact of vandalism and other things, and I'm going to include load shedding in that, that impact on the availability of the network. So yes, absolutely, this does have an impact, especially on the last mile where most of them are still copper links. So you'll find that the core is fiber, but when you now have the last mile and access links, but when you have the last mile to the actual government office, you find that we are still using the older copper links, which are susceptible to theft and other things like that. We've already started engaging with our partners to start to migrate those from copper to fiber. So even now, these last mile links, and to ensure that they are upgraded from a minimum to a minimum of 10 megabits per second, which will then answer the question that was raised around, you know, not being able to support modern applications because of bandwidth limitations. So this is something that we are busy doing with our partners. In fact, we've just published a bid a month ago to go province by province to ensure that we replace those access links with fiber, and ensure that all connectivity to the various offices is at a minimum of 10 megabits per second. And this is something that we are more than happy to come back perhaps later in the year or next year to give feedback on with regards to progress, as that is something that I believe that members will find very useful from an impact perspective. The question from Honorable Komane with regards to the redesign of the CETA core network and how much budget it had to take and the like. Yes, definitely there's a capital investment project that we are doing to enhance the core CETA network. It was initially delayed because of budget availability issues. However, I can confirm that all of those budget issues have since been resolved, and we are now, you know, we are clear in terms of making sure that that project runs its course and make sure that we can upgrade the core network. I think an additional question that was attached to that was with regards to the various timelines, which I think I've already confirmed that we don't have any risk right now of missing the timeline right now of the redundant links of September. And then the broader project that goes province by province, we can give an update later on once the service provider has been appointed. The last question that I just want to touch on, which came from various members as well, is with regards to security or cybersecurity. And I can confirm that, yes, all of these are done with cybersecurity in mind. We do run a secure network. We do have a network operations center that does track activity across our entire network. We also have products like our secure operations or security operations center or SOC that we do offer to the clients as well, you know, to be able to monitor cybersecurity related events, not only at the network level, but also at the application level, which CETA does provide. So I just thought I'd also touch on that since cybersecurity seemed to be a topical issue as well, which I'm more than happy to speak to anyone in terms of how we can improve or advise on increasing the level of cyber resilience in any department. Chairperson, I'm going to stop there and then hand back to you. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mabaso. We are moving to the department. Honorable DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to allocate some of the questions as I move through to colleagues from Zaid and colleagues who may be connected from the team. There was the first question that talked to a strategic implementation plan to attain digitization. What are the three targeted projects for automation? I think Zaid can answer that question. And how many system developers government has across? I'm not sure, Zaid, if you have that information from the work that you've been doing with government departments. If not, I think it's information we can bring back to the department, but I will hand over to you as well. What other programs have we initiated that impact on public service delivery? Again, I'll leave that question to you, Zaid. But I do want to comment, Chair, on this matter that the role of the Department of Public Service and Administration, the core mandate of the Department of Public Service and Administration, is to establish norms and standards. So the type of a budget and resources that the department is given is a budget and resources that are mainly around research and around policy work and not development of systems, because our role is limited on developing norms and standards. So even when we spoke about the business process mapping project that were involved in the automation, this project started where and one of our unit, which is I think the service delivery unit, worked with a number of departments to document some of their processes. I think we have about 48 processes that have been delivered in the previous financial year. And then we took a decision to take some of the processes that were delivered, that were mapped manually, to work with CETA and other partners around automating these processes. So it's really work for us that is aimed at improving or sharpening our norms and standards more than a full implementation of automation of processes in the public service, because we don't have such resources as the department. Even the component of the work that we are saying we are doing, we really have to find resources to pay for it, because CETA does not do work for free for us as the department. We have to find those resources to do the work. Our intention is to sharpen our role in terms of the norms and standards that we have to present to develop as a department, considering that our role is really around that, and we have to do lots of research and policy work to be able to develop those norms and standards. The next question that was asked was on systems not speaking to one another. And there was an example made of the Department of Social Development and Grants that some of the public servants had access to. We've worked with social development to understand what's going on in this space, but let me just highlight that the issue is that we have a legacy system called PESAL, which is a remuneration system, which cannot do certain functions, and which has some level of security measures as well that must be maintained. And part of the work that over years that we've been trying to do, led by Treasury, is around the IFMS, because the IFMS is supposed, one of the things it's supposed to do is to help us with an integrated human resource systems, which PESAL is not an integrated human resource management system. PESAL is just a remuneration system for the public service, which is outdated in many ways. But the delays in IFMS, which we have spoken about many times in this committee, has also contributed to where we are today in terms of our systems from a remuneration and integrated human resource management point of view. And I know members are going to ask again, where is IFMS? What's happening with IFMS? We were called in SCOPA last week again on issues of IFMS as Treasury and DPSA and CETA, and the SIU was presenting its investigation report. As members would know that IFMS is still on investigation, and SIU presented its own investigation report on IFMS, and it shows that there's material irregularities, and it is really going to be a challenge for this project to continue under the environment of the SIU report that has been released to SCOPA a few days ago. However, there's a conversation pending with Treasury and CETA on what alternatives are there, what do we do next if IFMS for any reason cannot go ahead and be implemented. So there is that issue that is still work being handled, and I'm unable to speak in detail about it, but I thought it's important to highlight that the issue of integrated, disintegrated systems that we have and underdeveloped systems that we have is also contributing to the challenge that we have. But when the issue was picked up, we've really cooperated and supported social development. The last time I checked, we had written to departments, to all departments that had public servants were implicated to do the consequence management in terms of those public servants that were implicated. Why only four departments? When will other departments benefit? It's really a matter of resources and prioritization. However, Zaid can also speak in detail on our plans in relation to this. There was a question. I've spoken about, in a way, speaking about IFMS, I've also spoken about the Treasury moratorium. So there is a moratorium by Treasury that we cannot introduce any new systems in Program 1 currently because of IFMS. And so part of engagements that we are having with Treasury is to ensure that they lift that moratorium. It's only them who can lift that moratorium. So DBSA cannot lift the moratorium of Treasury because it's them who issued that moratorium. We have in the past written to Treasury around this particular issue, but there were no responses that we have received on it. There's a comment or a question that DBSA is not doing as it is expected. And, I've spoken again about the PESAL and remuneration system and the grants issue. That question was related to the grants issue as well, that were accessed by people, by public servants who shouldn't have accessed them. Other areas targeted for PPM, I'll leave that question to Zaid as well to answer. Alignment with the Presidential Industrial Commission, I'll leave that to Zaid to answer because it's also linked to the implementation of the eGov strategy, which different players have different roles and responsibilities to play in relation to that. Recommendations for digitization of the public service, I'll leave this to you, Zaid. However, I do want to comment that there is a ministerial committee that is doing oversight on work that is related to the digitization of the public service. The committee is chaired by the Minister for Disability, and who, in a way, they're playing a leading role in terms of this committee. It's looking at digitization issues broadly, DBSA, DCDT, and other big departments that are utilizing digital services like your Home Affairs and et cetera, are part of that particular committee. Department interventions across all organs of the state. DPSA's role is mainly related to the public service, which is national and provincial government. However, we work with a local government, and the amendment bill that is now in Parliament, one of the issues that it's working around is how do we tap into the different ICT systems and coordinate better as national, provincial and local government. But again, my colleagues can give further details in relation to that. The last issue, Chair, I wanted to comment on is the Tusong connectivity. The MD4 CETA is saying that Tusong connectivity is not a responsibility of CETA, or for some Tusong services, they are not connected by CETA. There was a decision taken by government some years ago, I think in cabinet, which required that CETA should be responsible for coordination of Tusong centers. However, it seems there was an expectation from CETA that somebody is going to pay for that, and that somebody was expected to pay was DPSA, because sometime last year we got a letter from CETA which indicated the cost of running the IT systems of Tusong. I think it was estimated around a billion or something. I can't recall the exact information now, Chair, but we wrote back to CETA and we indicated to them that our understanding, DPSA has no budget that it has been given. Apologies, Chair, I have a little bit of flu. DPSA has no budget that has been given specifically to support Tusong centers from a connectivity point of view. As per our presentation in the last committee, there is one Tusong center that we started as a pilot that we are trying to hand over to the provincial government, where we've been able to provide a full bouquet of services. Even then, the departments who are participating in the Tusong Center are paying for some of the services through a cost recovery program that we have put in place in relation to that. So the issue of connectivity of Tusong centers is not a resolved issue. Somebody must still take a responsibility. It is, Tusong centers are a government program. It's either they are budgeted from the provinces that are hosting them or departments that are hosting them, or that responsibility is given to somebody and there's resources that are allocated. I think we had an extensive discussion in the last meeting on the Tusong centers and the fact that they need a lead department or a department that is housing them. Some people call it a mother department that is housing them, so that all these issues around their connectivity, around accessibility, around their maintenance are given attention and dealt with in an organized manner. Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I'd like to hand over to Zaid on some of the specific technical issues that require his attention. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You can take over, Mr. Abubakar.
Excuse me, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Gigi, and thank you, members, for those questions. I think Gigi's covered much of what I need to speak about. Let me just look at the specific ones. I think the issue of the departments having a strategic implementation plan to attain digitalization by 2024, I think what we must understand is that the matter of digitalization is going to be an ever evolving target and ever moving target in terms of modernization of our services. Of course we understand that we are not where we need to be, and as we try to move forward, we will try to establish specific targets. So in terms of the MTSF and the e-government strategy that has been tabled by DCDT at cabinet, the role of the DPSA was identified in terms of establishing the enabling legislation for digitalization. And I think in my presentation on the background, I spoke about the four directives that were issued by the DPSA to enable this. I spoke about cloud. I spoke about cybersecurity and how it's going to enable digitalization. I spoke about IT service continuity and, of course, governance of digital governance. And lastly, the last one that we are about to publish is the directive on knowledge and data management. So in terms of our approach, the DG spoke about our mandate and where our focus areas are in terms of enabling legislation, enabling departments to be able to digitalize. We believe that we do have a program in place, and I've also spoken about the draft digital government policy framework that we are finalizing to be able to enable some of that. Implementation, as DG has indicated, happens at a departmental level. And so what we've tried to do in developing these prescripts that we have, specifically the governance one, is we've tried to make sure that we can bring matters of digital priorities into the strategic plans of departments. So in the determination and directive, we've required departments, as they do their strategic planning, now to indicate what their digital priorities are going to be. And this, we believe, is going to give departments the freedom to be able to make the decisions it needs to make in terms of its resources and its priorities and mandates, but at the same time, give us as a collective, as we consolidate those plans from the individual plans into a country plan, give us a sense of where we are going in terms of specific digitalization initiatives. I can tell you, Chair and members and colleagues, that we see digitalization technology projects or digitalization projects being implemented on a daily basis. Some of the examples you would be familiar with, the fact that we can now go onto a portal and renew our vehicle licenses, our discs, and get them delivered to us within a few days at a small cost, is an example of digitalization happening in the public sector and public service currently. We recently came back from the CETA GovTech initiative, and there were many, many technology examples showcased of where government departments are digitalizing, including in the South African Police Services are about to launch a digital platform looking at some of their services. So I think digitalization is happening. It continues to happen. Ours is to make sure that we increase the pace. Ours is to make sure that we can look at some of the coordination that needs to happen a little bit better from that perspective. Then the question around system developers across government. I've checked quickly on our dashboard, DG, and we have 310 system developers that we can identify from those departments that have responded in terms of our questionnaire. And I can tell you that it's close to 90% of departments that have responded. So we believe that the number 310 is a fairly good number in terms of what we have out there. And that's of the 4,500 IT staff that we have in government. Of course, that number is low. Of course, that number needs to be increased. But what do we increase it to? What is the target number? The answer to that question will depend on the decisions that we take collectively between DCDT, CITA, and ourselves about what we as government want to build ourselves, what we want CITA, for instance, to build on behalf of government, all departments, what we want a department to build and create capability to build themselves, and what it makes sense for us to buy. There are certain digital technology platforms that it just doesn't make sense for us as government to reinvent the wheel. There are private sector companies, there are software vendors that do it well and will continue to do it well. And these applications have reached a point where they are mature. And so it makes no sense for us as government, both financially and in terms of having the resources to be able to build it ourselves. So these decisions we will make in consultation, in collaboration with DCDT and with CITA. And we'll try to integrate that in terms of our digital government policy framework, which, as I've indicated, it has a pillar around what we call government platforms. And included under government platforms are the digital platforms that need to be enabled for that. So I think that answers the question of the system developers. Digi, you've spoken about our role in terms of the modernization and how we set the norms and standards, but really the requirements to modernize is sitting at departments. And I must indicate, and I think it would have come out in the CPSI presentation itself, Regulation 93, that requires and has required for some time now that heads of departments then use digital technologies to transform services and obtain internal efficiencies. So I think from that perspective, we are here to support, and I've indicated how we support that with our enabling legislation. There was a question on why did we only work with four government departments. Again, I think it's been answered from the perspective of saying that we have limited resources. We have 161 national and provincial departments. Each department probably has numerous business processes, and so it's just not feasible for us as DPSA to go in and do the work ourselves. We've chosen to work in this particular way because we believe this to be a catalytic project, taking from the Business Process Modernization Program its documentation of manual processes. We want to showcase how we can bring technology to these manual processes. We want to create the case studies. We want to use these examples to inspire and to take lessons out of that. And so that is the approach, given our limited resources, towards how we want to modernize the rest of government. DG has spoken about the issue of social development and the data. Let me just add to that. The knowledge and the data management directive that we will publish soon seeks to also include or to create in departments a minimum maturity level when it comes to data and managing data. It has to be the responsibility of the owning department to ensure that the data is of a good quality, that the data is reliable. And part of checking whether data is reliable is to make sure that departments are able to integrate with each other. And so from an integration perspective, the integration at a technology level has been in place for some time now. Technology is at a point where you really find technology that is not able to integrate with other technology platforms. That technology, if it existed today, would not survive in the common landscape. So the solution for integration has to be driven from the business in terms of a requirement. And so what we are trying to do from a data management in terms of the determination and directive is to create those mature practices in departments so that departments then do have data strategies. They do have policies in place around data maturity, around data reliability, around data accuracy, and all of those other data competencies in order to be able to then lead from that, from those policies and those practices in departments, then into the integration and to the data practices and into the integration of systems. Unless we do it that way, we will always simply just be trying to fight fires and putting out a specific problem that we find. And so for us as a DPSA, when we look at the public service, we want to institutionalize some of these mature practices that enable the digitalization. And so these directives are meant to do that. In terms of the question around the specific program and which other areas we're looking at, there are a number of business processes that have been mapped. In KZN, there are processes around leave management, which we won't touch because it deals with the IFMS and the moratorium. But there's also quality management processes. There's debt management. There's housing subsidy claims from the Northwest, housing subsidy administration in the Northwest. In Limpopo, there's financial management in traditional councils, which might be touch and go in terms of the moratorium, but we'll decide, I think, in the third and the fourth quarters, which process we select. It'll also be based on the willingness of the department to partner and collaborate with us, because to a certain extent, we may be able to identify processes that make sense from a DPSA perspective for us to be able to support in terms of the proposals. But if the department is not prepared, if the department is not ready, then it becomes very difficult. So I think we have about 13 or 14 processes that we can choose from to select the remaining two or three that we need to do in this financial year. DG, I think you've answered around other organs of state. From an alignment perspective in terms of the e-government plan and presidential 4IR commission, of course, there are a number of recommendations coming out of the 4IR Commission, including in that investment in human capital development. And so when we bring it back to the public service, as part of the work of identifying and coming to the 0.3%, the issues that CPSI raised in terms of capacity constraints in departments, and of course the question around system developers, we've started the exercise of collecting the data, but we've also partnered with Tshwane University of Technology through PCTA to do some studies around this particular data set and to understand what our current future or what our current capacity and skills constraints are, but also then to look into the future through that exercise and the relationship with TUT and PCTA to look at the future skills requirements in the public service. So the relationship is quite and the alignment is quite strong as we take from the 4IR Commission. There are some things, of course, like the establishment of the AI Institute that are happening in other sectors by other departments. But I think let me just speak about the issue of building 4IR infrastructure is very closely linked to the digital the policy framework that we are developing, taking from the 4IR recommendation to talk about government platforms and what those key platforms are going to be. And again, let me reiterate that we are working in partnership and we are developing in partnership what those common platforms are. CETA have been speaking in public at GovTech around government platforms that they want to build. And so you can see how these things dovetail from the 4IR Commission to the policy framework that we're developing. And then they must be then supported and speak to the strategies of the DCDT, of CETA and of departments. The last one from my 4IR commission, I think they speak about securing data and enabling innovation. Of course, from a CPSI perspective, in the innovation perspective, they are dealing with that. And for us, the security of data, I've spoken about the directive on security that we've published in 2022, in June 2022. And I've spoken as well about the directive and determination that we'll publish around data management. So, I hope I've covered all of those, DG, Minister and Honourable Members.
No, thank you, thank you, thank you, Mr. Abubakar. If there are no follow-up questions, I will then hand over to the Minister. Minister Honorable Nopolo Kivit, so that we then release them and they remain for the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Given that we also have a DM on the platform, I had hoped to give a minute or two before I round up with the responses. If with your permission, of course.
No, that's fine, Honourable Minister. DM.
As a chairperson, thank you, Minister. Good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee, to DGs from various divisions, senior management that is here on the platform. to say that I think the presentation itself, Honorable Chairperson, has actually tried to give an idea of the intention of government when it comes to modernization, digitization, and automation in government to help improve services so that we can fast-track development in the background of creating a capable, ethical, capable, and developmental state. What is important would be for us to be in the position at some stage, listening to all the presentation, and I must actually say that the presentations are good, and I'm sure Honorable Chairperson, you can actually have an idea of the amount of work that has been done in government towards the goal of actually modernization. But what is important at the end of the day is to, it's probably for us to actually manage to have a good common national strategy, good structure that talks to strategy to avoid overstaffing, enough budget that will actually cut across government departments, and a common vision that's based on commitment. But what's also important for us to actually manage to pull out of the discussion, similarly to the concept of Tussauds Service Centres, it looks like this that I'm actually saying is what needs to be consolidated in government. Also, we'll actually need a lead home or a lead department, which is what we are still grappling with, hoping that along the way we will actually manage to really come to final decision as to where all of this can be housed in a way that can actually help to coordinate. Because for now, our weakness is coordination of what we are doing to the extent that it might actually begin to look like enough is not being done when there is enough that is being done, but because the coordination is not that good, it might actually then leave gaps unnecessarily. And we're hoping that with time, we will be in the position to cover the gaps in order for us to actually manage to come up with meaningful and practical solution to matters that requires modernization, digitization, and automation of government. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, DM. And thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for your questions and comments, because they help us as a department to also sharpen our approaches to the areas that need a focus especially. And therefore, they're always welcome in terms of driving us forward. I must indicate that CPSI is a very small intact organization which is doing a lot of work with little, which is an approach that as government we need to take, because we all understand the fiscal situation of the country, and we must all be prepared to do the best we can with the little we have. And I want to appreciate what they are able to do with that little that they get. But it also opens us to say we need to find other ways to enhance their attempts to live up to their mandate. But also, in the past, I've emphasized to them the importance of collaborating with those departments that have mandate, the direct mandate, those institutions such as DCDT, such as CITA, on some of their work. But what is most important is their collaboration with the departments that would use the innovations that have been registered with them. That being said, just less than a month ago, we were in a place called Estonia in Europe as part of the Open Government OPG, Open Government Partnership. And one has had an opportunity to learn what other countries are doing, because Estonia is, in as much as they have a very small population, it's about 1.2 million, but their level of utilization of technology, especially in government, and how they collaborate with the private sector in the space has made them one of the best countries that utilizes technologies in the government system. So for me, the issue of us having a lot of challenges, I think we should be able as a country to leverage on the use of technologies, digital transformation. We should be able to drive that with Zoom, because it does have potential to help us transcend the kind of challenges that we face as a country. The public service, you will hear people saying it's bloated, but comparatively speaking, it is not bloated. Actually, we are understaffed if one could compare with the other developing countries, which are at 6% when we are at 3.1%. In terms of ratio to population. So for us to leverage on technologies would help us, on the use of technologies, would help us bridge that gap. And therefore, Chair, the topic at hand, or what we are accounting about today, is a really a primary core area we should be focusing on as government. And therefore, it's against that background that even the president has assigned three ministers, that is the minister of the DCDT to convene the minister of DPSA and the minister of finance. We are that IMC interministerial committee that is focusing on the use of technologies in ensuring that we have systems that are responsive to the challenges that the people in a country are experiencing. But that is because of the mandate of the department, which DG has touched upon. But for me, our role is to ensure also that we conduct advocacy for the programs that both CETA, CPSI would have come up with to solve our governance and management challenges. That being said, Chair, we've met already quite a number of times, and you have also involved CETA in some of our meetings, with a view to ensure that we come up with mega projects that would respond and be able to cover the rest of government. And we are being assisted by international bodies. As I was saying, the OGP had chosen Estonia because of the strength of Estonia in this area. And we had an opportunity to interact with and learn from their approaches. And we are ready to share our experiences with the people of South Africa so as to ensure that we also drive vigorously the programs of the digitization and digitalization of our systems. But collaboration is surely the way to go if we are to go far. And therefore, I would want the chair to appreciate once more the inputs from the various members on the platform, and as well as officials, DM, and all. I thank you, Chair, for the opportunity once more. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Thank you to the Deputy Minister, the DG and the team, the CPSI, and then Honorable Members and the CITA and our colleagues. And now you are all released and will remain as Honorable Members just to finish the last item, which is our minutes. Thank you very much to all of you. Have a good Lankika day.
Thank you, and goodbye. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Marcy, the next item is minutes. I'm not sure how many are there, and I'm already at the bus stop. Can you share the minutes? If I'm having a network problem in the bus, Honorable Ntuli will take over.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honorable Members. We have got our three sets of minutes, Chairperson. I'll go quickly through them. The first one is the minutes of the 31st of May, Chairperson. I'm on the first page already, Chairperson. I'm on page one. Tenants register. Page two. Page three, Chair. Page four. That's page five. That's the last page, Chairperson. These are the news of 31st of May, 2023.
No, thank you very much, Marcy. Honorable Members, the minutes of the 31st May, anything to be rectified or anything to be edited to the minutes, Honorable Members?
Chair Mantuli? Nothing to edit and to amend from my side. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
The minutes has been moved by Honorable Ntuli. Any seconder, Honorable Members?
Honorable Chair, it's Mike TV here. I second the mover by Honorable Ntuli. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kipi. The next set, Masish.
Yes, Chair. These ones are on the 7th of June, Chairperson, 2023. I am on page one, Chairperson. I think we're talking the report of the Northern Cape, the oversight. Okay, page two, Chair. And as a page 3, Chairperson. I think we're also adopting minutes on the same date. That's the last page, page 4. Minutes of the 7th of June, Chair.
Honorable members, the minutes of the 7th of June, any additions and or subtractions, honorable members?
Honorable Chair, the TV here, there are no additions from my side, and I move for the acceptance of the minutes of the 7th of June. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable KB. Any seconda, honorable members?
Honorable Chairperson, it's Mantuli here. I second Honorable Kibi for adopting the minutes.
Thank you so much, Honorable Ntuli. The next set, must be.
These are the last ones. Thank you.
Yes, the last one.
Yes, Chairperson. These are the for the 6th of September. 2 weeks back, Chairperson. I think we're dealing with Tisong Centers. I'm on page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. That's the last page, Chairperson. Thank you. Minutes of the 6th of September, 2023, Chair.
Here are the minutes, Honorable Members. Any additions or subtractions to the minutes?
Honorable Chair, it's Honorable TV here. No additions or subtractions from my side. I move for the adoption of this set of minutes. I thank you, Chair.
Chairperson. How will
send
that? Honorable members, the set of the minutes of the 6th of September has been adopted. Is there any seconder?
Manel, I second.
Thank you, Comrade. Thank you, Honorable Manelli, for seconding Comrade Honorable Kibi. Marcy?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Do we have any other item after this?
No, Chair. That's the last agenda item, Chair. You can close the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. With all the work that have been before us for the day, now the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and goodbye to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Recording stopped.